Welcome to Partially Derivative, the show about data, data science, machine learning, and artificial intelligence. My name is Chris Alpin, and co-hosting with me this week is Vidya Spandana.
Hey!
Vid, what have you been up to this week?
Let's see. I've been enjoying this summer. I've been getting to talk to some interesting art schools, mainly.
Wow.
Yeah, there's this whole question mark about the future of education, especially higher ed and especially art school higher ed, as far as where the jobs are, what the evolving needs of the markets will be, you know, things like how can data and data science potentially be incorporated into art school as part of curriculum. And, you know, interesting questions like that. I've been trying to kind of grapple with wondering whether we even need to have like 4-year schools or 2-year kind of advanced degrees at all anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, is that even relevant? Because by the time 2 years goes by, it's like everything's changed. So instead, should we just have these like rolling forever, you know, you're in school forever and you just keep learning scenarios, and maybe there's a business model around it. So I've been kind of pitching around crazy, weird ideas like that to some schools, and it's been pretty fun.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, something that I have realized a lot recently is how important it is to have in like in the modern field that we're in, to have that continuous learning that I never really thought would be like actually something in my life. Like growing up, I don't really think about this. I didn't think about this that much. But I remember a moment where I was like, I'm going to get a PhD. I'm going to be an expert in something. And then I'm just going to be that expert for forevermore.
Right.
You know, like I'm kind of done. I've experted myself.
Right.
And I just like work in that field and be that expert. But it turns out that like I feel like a permanent student. Like I have note cards, I have flashcards, I have books that I'm reading. I'm constantly looking at, you know, the next thing, the next tutorial, but like where I want to go from here. And even like, you know, like at jobs, like, okay, what can I do to sort of increase my skill level of this? Maybe I can do a lot of these models, but I've never done these other, you know, these other type of models. I should work on those and doing more Bayesian and like all this kind of stuff of like constantly attempting to do this lifelong learning, which I think is just going to be, you know, in data science, I think it's just going to be like par for the course for like the whole thing. But it's really not what I thought.
Yeah. Well, I kind of wish I had this idea of like what I wanted to be when I grew up. It sounds like you kind of had a sense of like, this is what my plan is. So I never, ever have a plan. And I still don't really. It's almost like, what's the next thing that's going to be interesting? Mm-hmm. And so from that perspective, too, I feel like I buy textbooks pretty regularly, like weirdly, like I'm buying random textbooks on all sorts of weird random topics all the time, just because who knows what the next thing might be. And this thing that is the next thing for me might actually be the next thing for what, you know, a community needs or for what a market needs. So, yeah, I think that also just keeps me energized and jazzed. I don't know. I tend to kind of get bored or have things get slow if they're kind of repetitive or it's the same thing, if I'm like too familiar with it almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, but it sounds like from what I'm hearing that universities are also kind of struggling with this because they too have to evolve and kind of fit into this model where the industry is changing so fast that the students that they're, you know, pumping out every few years are a little bit behind before they even get their first job, you know, before they can even start doing anything. They're behind.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Like, I just finished Ian Goodfellow and a few other people who I don't remember the title, their book on deep learning, which is called Deep Learning. And that is, like, that is the book that you should read right now if you work on deep learning. And it is so interesting to read it because the authors are very honest about basically saying, hey, like, we don't know if this works. This seems to work. Like, this method sort of seems to work empirically, but, like, we don't have enough research on it yet to know if it's actually really, you know, actually really working or not, or, like, how the specifics of how, you know, like, how it does what it does and how it does in all cases. And, like, the book, the reason that I actually really am so happy that book came out is because it came out last year. So it is cutting edge now. But I really do wonder, you know, 5 years from now, how much of that book is not going to still be cutting edge.
Like, it just might be solved or not relevant anymore next year.
Well, it has, like, so the third of the book is about sort of different, like advanced research in AI. So the first third is sort of like the basics behind it. The second third is like the production models, like CNNs and RNNs and like that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. It's just like used out everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the last third is like the sort of cutting edge research part, because it's for a grad student to sort of survey the research that's happened and then go off and like move off and do their own research and that kind of stuff. But you know, like in a few years, some of those things that they talk about in the advanced research part could be disproven as not effective anymore, or could be the thing that every single company is using, or whatever, right? Like, because it's you're at the cutting edge. You some things work and some things mm-hmm. don't work, and some things look promising and then they turn out they don't. And so I am so happy that I'm reading this book now and not finding this book, you know, 5 or 6 years from now. And sort
of, yeah,
you know, and that's, I mean, that's my thing. Like, When I saw the book, I was like, okay, cool, I'll read it. And then I opened it up and I saw that it was from 2016. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I wonder if we're still around in like 5 years, you should do a little book report moment.
Oh yeah, like to go back and see what actually stayed and what didn't. Yeah, that's an interesting idea. No, I mean, because it's hard to convey to people who aren't doing anything related to, you know, sort of machine learning, but also like specifically deep learning and stuff like that, like how fast mm-hmm. the field is moving. Because when you come into the field and you start doing statistics, like statistics have been studied forever, and there are cutting edge statistical things, sure, but like when someone talks about like a logistic regression or like just a regular mm-hmm. linear regression, like people have to study this. Like a billion papers have been wrote for about, like 1,000 dissertations. Like it's been used for so long that you're really treading on solved problems, right? You, like people are just explaining to this thing that we know how best to do it. This is exactly the best way. Everything's fine, yada, yada. And then when you get into the, you know, the world of deep learning, it's like, I don't know, this seems to fucking work, but we don't know why it's working, but like, fuck it, like, cool. You know, like, when we do cross-validation, looks like it's working. Awesome. And like, that is, like, it is moving insanely fast, where like every few weeks there's some new thing that like totally shows a new area or like cuts off an old area. So I don't know how the book will age. I hope it ages well, because it is a really, really good book. But you know, I hope it works out well for him. That's a pretty intense thing to write a book about.
Right. So are we jumping into stories?
Let's do it.
Let's see, it's my turn to tell the story. And I just want to start and give a little title, a little context, that this is the most badass thing I've read in months. Seriously, I was like, holy shit, this is happening right now? I mean, I think it's the most badass thing I probably read like the whole year. Maybe I haven't been reading interesting. Clearly, I've just been reading lots of boring textbooks.
Yeah, I know.
But this was like super cool. Okay, you ready? Okay, so
I'm ready.
Okay, you're sitting down because it's badass.
I'm definitely sitting down, yeah.
Okay. So Europol, which is the EU's law enforcement agency, it's kind of like Interpol, but focused on countries within the European Union. So about 10 days ago, Europol announced that the Dutch police had secretly taken over and run the second largest illegal drug marketplace on the dark web. Seriously, it could probably be one of the largest black market for drugs in the world, because it's online. Like, it could be humongous. And the feds were controlling this black market for like a whole month.
Were they like, were people getting drugs?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. Like, imagine, like, that's just, it's crazy. So imagine Joe, like some shady Joe drug dealer living somewhere like dark and seedy and hanging out at internet cafes. Which,
no, you know, I have a thing against Joe. Jesus.
Well, internet cafes, I don't know if that's a thing anymore. But but I always feel like these guys work at it because they can't work from home. So they're going to have to, I don't know. Of course they can work from home. They can like, okay, anyway, let me get on with the story. Joe is probably like transacting in this marketplace, like buying crates of meth or something while sipping on a frappuccino.
Crates of meth.
I don't know how meth gets like sold in bulk.
Crates?
Like crates?
Crates of meth. That's like a band name.
That's pretty good. Yeah, and he's like transacting in a marketplace that's run by the popos. What?
It's like, but how are they? Was there some like place in the Dutch police headquarters where they're packing up drugs and sending it off? Like, no. Oh, we need more meth for his meth crate.
No, it's like someone... it's like them being Amazon, and then there's buyers and sellers. So they're running the system.
Oh, so they're the middleman.
Right. So they're
providing customer service to drug dealers.
Correct. I love it. Okay, so and Interpol, not Interpol, Europol worked with the U.S. So it's like a combined effort to take down another one. So they took down two of the largest criminal dark web markets called Alphabay and Hansa. And I'm so glad to see this collaboration between countries, too, on fighting crime online. Like, it really never made sense to me that somehow the location of the servers where the bad stuff was stored, like, created little pockets of safe zones for criminals. Like, why? That makes no sense. It's like, obviously on the internet, anybody can, well, not anybody, but people outside of China and other places can access the internet and get access to that shit. So, like, it should be fair game for international law enforcement agencies. Just, they have to have a department that worked on the cloud or something.
No, I mean, and that's what's so crazy about this story is that I have always wondered how law enforcement goes about these kinds of things. Because if you are a criminal, like you're Joe sitting in your quote unquote coffee shop, and like like you have such a huge incentive to exploit the bleeding edge of technology. Like what you want is that piece of technology that no one else is really familiar with before, and then use that in a way that you can take advantage of. Like for example, like in I'm sure in a few years, like 2 years or 3 years, you'll be able to create perfect quality or near perfect quality fake voice recordings of people.
Scary.
And imagine, you know, Joe goes to some politician and says, "Hey, I have this voice recording of you saying that you're going to murder your opponent who happened to die in a car crash." And that, you know, and then the politician's like, "Well, I didn't say that." And he's like, "Look here, look, man, it's on tape." Like, because right now, video and tape are the sort of, if it is on video or tape, we believe it. If it's a sort of like a he said, she said, she said kind of thing, we like, right. Okay, cool, both sides have points. But as soon as there's like a tape, but like we are very, very close to the moment where you could, you know, make a fake tape behind something. And like eventually, you know, the cops will catch up to this and eventually society will catch up to this.
Yeah.
But like, not, but if like, if you see some, you know, if you see some cutting edge Python package that just got out, that's like how to create fake things. And all of a sudden you know, for like a 6 months, you're just creating fake tapes and sending them off. I don't know why we're using tape, fake, like MP3 files and sending them off to politicians and that kind of, you know, like, I mean, it's just like there is.
So these criminals are like sitting there, like they look exactly like a Chris Alvin, like reading textbooks, reading these books, wondering what the future will be. Is this book going to be out of date in 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, because I really have a hard time believing that police departments are sort of structured and funded and staffed in a way to attempt to counter cutting edge.
I know.
Like, well, you know, like, I don't know if you use like a drone to deliver drugs. It's like, you know, like, I don't know, like, I think they're just getting started on handling that stuff, like, down along the border. But, like, I don't know, like, I'm sure there was years where people could send drones with drugs on them, and, like, they just didn't really have an answer to that.
I know. And you know what? That's actually why I love this article so much, truthfully, because I feel like they're, like, maybe catching up. Like, how could it be that the police, like a giant, but not just like one guy or whatever, but like a whole organized, you know, months of insane planning and strategy and executing everything perfectly to then take control over it and like, and manage it for a month and pretend to be like, you know, the way that it normally was. They apparently even pretended to be regular, like random dudes in Indiana and went undercover as buyers. Seriously, and bought stuff, like bought crazy shit, like illegal arms, like tons of guns for cash.
Wow.
And it just makes me happy to see the good guys like smarten up and proactively hunt down these black markets. And because in my, and maybe it's just like TV or something, but I always just see that like law enforcement is not really quite there yet. So I was like, sweet. They're totally on top of this. I mean, there's, and these people on these black markets aren't just selling drugs or weapons, but like they're selling human beings. It's pretty horrible. It's like there's so much sludge that gets transacted online. And so it'll be really interesting to see how law enforcement shows up on the cloud.
Oh, totally.
And as these two big black markets got shut down and the people running them are getting prosecuted, right? Like, sure, that's what's happening. People are getting put in jail. The sellers are getting put in jail. The feds also announced that they'll be going after buyers So according to reports, and this is like a quote, following Europol's announcement, there has been a string of drug-related arrests along the globe. Meanwhile, word on the street is that the third largest illegal dark web marketplace called Dream Market is also currently under the supervision of authorities.
What? Wow. There's like no place. They're all taken over.
Yeah. And so apparently they've got about 500 people that they're aiming to arrest who bought stuff on the site. So like people who are, and it's pretty vague on what the transactions are that would warrant these arrests. So people online are freaking out about like, oh, I know their little shopping trip to get 10 pills of like ecstasy or something, we'll send them into jail. But then like, maybe they should, like, yes, you should totally go to jail. Cause it's funny because people are like, shockingly, they're coming after the people who are buyers. And I'm like, why is that shocking?
Yeah. Like, isn't that like,
they're also doing illegal shit. Like,
yeah,
no, people are like freaking out like, no, they're not really gonna go after the, it kind of reminded me of like Napster. Remember when like Napsters would come and like put grandmas in jail and it's like their grandkids that would like steal
you're,
like shitty
you're really movie. You're really dating you remember that? Podcast. We are hip cool people. We don't remember Napster at all. I don't know what
well,
you're
I read about,
about
it. I watched a documentary on Netflix about it.
Like one of those paper book things.
Right. So like people are figuring out, but this is where I think things get really interesting because there are bots out there shopping on the dark net, buyers. And if the feds arrest entities that are purchasing illegal goods, there's no reason why bots shouldn't get arrested, right? But like, what does that actually mean? How can you even arrest a bot? I can't even understand what arresting a bot looks like because I'm thinking like Cops, the TV show.
Like a bot is like running and hopping over fences.
Right, exactly. And they're playing that Bad Boys song in the background and it's like, I don't understand how they, like where, how does it work? Do they just steal the, do they confiscate the servers?
Yeah, I think this is the craziest part of this, and the part of this is sort of has like the broadest implications, because so I don't know anything about Swiss law, which is where one of the, or Dutch law, which was when like where one of the servers were or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, and I don't really know US law that much, so like don't get me off on this, like, but like I know it's pretty common in the US to bring cases against inanimate objects. So like here's an example. It's a case called the United States v $100,000 in U.S. currency, three associated TVs, 167 electric guitars, what? Five assorted wristwatches, 13 pieces of stereo equipment, and one 1966 Shelby Cobra. Is that, that's like the whole
wait,
thing.
Wait, so the United States versus all the shit?
All that shit. And like, it sounds like really strange, and it frankly probably is strange, but the reason that they do this is it's like the legal method that the government uses to confiscate stuff.
Oh.
So like, imagine like, I don't know, a drug plane crashes and the people get away or something. Like how they seize that plane is they charge, or I don't know, they bring a case against the plane, and then the plane obviously loses because, you know, it's a plane, and filled with drugs.
That sounds unfair to me.
and then the plane, you know, the plane, like, you know, then they get to take the plane and that kind of stuff. But the, like, the part of it that is really weird is that when you kind of expand it to the idea of bots, like with the plane, it's sort of like, okay, it seems like a legal vehicle to like confiscate stuff. Sure. But like, you know, with a bot, you could really, a bot has a lot more independence than a plane and like what it does. And so if you bring a case against a bot, like there's no human person that's a guilty party. Like, no one is in the wrong. Like, it's not like human justice. It's just like, you know.
Well, unless you straight up program, like hard programmed a bot to like go kill somebody.
Yeah.
but you know, it's true. The problem is that there is so much room where like the human doesn't necessarily tell the bot what to do, but the bot does it on its own, and then that's when things get funky. And a couple of years ago, a group of artist hackers in Germany calling themselves, and I have no how to pronounce this, Maiden Group Bitnik, maybe?
Sure.
Created their bot. They created the Random Darknet Shopper. And it's a machine intelligence that uses bitcoins that it gets like dropped into its account, and it buys totally random things on the dark net. Like, no one's telling it to go buy bad things. And because there's like, you know, dark net has, like I said, all sorts of things, not just like dead bodies and live bodies, but also like random junk. And so this was actually an art project that was intended to bring up the same these same questions of responsibility and blame for of these criminal acts up to discussion and up to just have a conversation about it. So whose fault would it be if the machine learning algorithm buys a bunch of ecstasy and meth illegally? Like, no one necessarily programmed it to buy those things, so no one told it to do anything illegal.
Yeah.
And interestingly, this random darknet shopper did in fact buy a bunch of ecstasy and and a fake Hungarian passport.
But, all right.
But the shopper also bought a pair of Nike Air Yeezy 2s. I mean, who wouldn't? Am I right?
Yeah, totally.
And it bought bootleg Diesel jeans because it wanted like the real deal. It didn't care about that it was copied. I don't know. And then this is the best thing. It bought a stash box that looks like a can of Sprite. Do you remember those things?
I would just like to point out that you're like, there's all this legitimate things on the dark web you can buy, and you just named a bunch of things that it bought at random, literally a random sample of things, and like all but the stash box that looks like a can of Sprite are super shady. Like, it's drugs, fake passport, bootleg jeans, and I guess shoes.
Bootleg jeans, I guess they're shady. I don't know about super shady, but I guess they're shady. But it's hilarious to me. And the artist basically got all this stuff shipped back to their studio and then straight up had a showing at a gallery about it with all this stuff in it. This is awesome.
It's like meth on the wall.
Yeah, literally. Like, it's so great. And then, okay, the day after the closing of the bots exhibition, I think at this gallery, prosecutors arrive at the gallery and seize the hardware that was running the bot and all of the items that it purchased, which also included a pack of cigarettes. Also, I forgot. I guess they had cigarettes.
Oh, that was it. That was the best. We have, I'm sure, bootleg cigarettes.
That's so weird. And took those things into custody. So that's interesting. So it actually did. They didn't arrest any humans. Hmm. Which is interesting. They're like, it's the bot's fault. We're taking this. But it's funny because it's like, well, the hardware that's running the bot, but if the bot just like copied itself to some other hardware, like, I don't even get how that could. It doesn't make sense. And they didn't arrest any humans because the German feds apparently thought this art project was really cool and like fascinating. And apparently they were glad that it brought up these questions for their industry to ponder. So nobody got arrested. But with these recent busts of like giant black markets, the whole point for the feds is to go after the humans who set up the systems.
Yeah.
And so like the laws will be really poured over. The language and the wording of every law will be interpreted in all sorts of crazy ways from both sides. And I ultimately think that the laws have to change, you know, to reflect this new reality of non-humans doing things, you know?
No, I mean, like, what is so crazy is that I feel like this case or these cases force us to consider this fundamental question, which is a bot responsible for its own actions? Mm. Which, like, if you thought about it, if a bot was responsible for its own actions, it's kind of like a person, right? It has a level of consciousness that you're blaming the bot for things. And like, the people right now are thinking that I'm like totally crazy, but let me put forward a thought experiment based on what you said before about murdering someone. So
okay.
say the three of us, me, you, and Jonathan, like, want to murder someone.
So just,
like,
oh, God.
Some random person, right? So, like, clearly murdering is a crime. We just want to murder some person.
Okay.
Say first Jonathan goes out and writes, a computer program that just is a regular script, and it just makes their laptop battery explode and kills him, right? So, like, Jonathan wrote a piece of code. The code made a battery explode. The exploding battery killed him.
Did he kill himself in the process of writing this code?
Probably. Like 40 Amazon servers. But like that's a super open and shut case. Like, Jonathan used code as a weapon to commit murder.
So, right, like, that's clear.
Jonathan's locked away. Let's make it a little bit, like, back it up one more step. Say that after seeing the horrible way Jonathan decided to do it, you decide that it's now your turn to kill someone. And say you write a computer program that has a, you know, 0.0001% chance of exploiting their laptop, which, given a little back of the napkin math, which is 1 out of 500 or 657,000, which is the number of hours in like an average human lifetime. So like 1 hour out of their whole lifetime, this thing's going to explode. And say one day that laptop explodes. Like, is this an open and shut case? Because like, you didn't really pull the trigger. In fact, the chances of this thing exploding was like super small, like way less than a car crash, right? Like, it's a very low chance, but you did write it to kill him. It was just like a really ineffective means.
There's definitely motive.
Right. So like, okay, it's like maybe, probably, like maybe, you know, like there's there's a case there, but like, say I come in and being the genius that I am, I see both of course. Them, like, feeble attempts to come up with, you know, a good strategy for this. And so say I, you know, train, this is probably a few years in the future, but like say I train a really advanced machine learning model to use reinforcement learning, which is where I give it a goal and then I don't tell it the strategy to complete the goal. It mm-hmm. learns the best strategy to complete that goal. So I give it the goal of, say, maximizing the harm to my enemies, which presumably this person is my enemy. And I don't tell it what to do. I just say, go out and figure out and learn how, you know, the best way to maximize the harm to my enemies based on some metric I use of maximizing harm. And so, it, you know, it goes out and then, you know, it goes out and it kills them. Like, it makes their laptop explode somehow. So I don't, like, this is where it's a little bit in the future.
It's not like some, like, psychological harm that's going to, like, slowly torture them to death.
Slowly so blackmails it to ruin all of its relationships.
Right, exactly. All of their friends leave.
Yeah. So just, I mean, that's probably even worse. But, like, just imagine that it goes out and it kills it. Like, it hacks into its self-driving car and drives into a wall or whatever. So, like, obviously we're a bit in the future because it's a little bit more advanced than the models we have now, but, like, just, you know, sure. And so, like, am I to blame for that? Because, like, not only did I not tell it to murder you, not murder you, sorry.
Murder the person.
Yeah. I didn't tell it to murder the person. I didn't give it a strategy for how to murder the person. In literally right now, the model, like, using our present technology, like, the model couldn't even tell me how it came to the decision to murder the person. You know, like, right. Like why it can't explain to me its decisions. It just went out and murdered them. Like, am I to blame for that? Like,
I think that you are, because you gave it a goal and the goal was to maximize harm. If your goal was to, like, bring joy to the world, I think that would
then it murders someone.
It just murders, like, someone.
That guy was an asshole.
Right, all better. The world. Correct.
I drove his Tesla off a cliff. We're all better for it.
Then I think you definitely would not be at fault.
So you're right. So, like, in each of the cases, it was the intent of the designer, right? So then, in that case, like, wouldn't there be a case against the people who the art group who had the German name that, like, they didn't tell it to order right. stuff, but they told it to just order anything on a market where there's lots of bad things.
Yeah, and it just said order show. Random stuff. Like, it could have, it did buy a pack of cigarettes. Like,
right.
That's cool. I mean, it's not a big deal.
Isn't that like going to, I mean, it's literally going to a drug market where everyone's selling drugs.
That's and then
being
true.
Like, I will buy whatever you guys got, legal okay. or not.
Okay, what if they programmed like a test shopper bot buying mm-hmm. that buys and evaluates like the shopping buying experience of something boring, like cereal, like it evaluates buying cereal on the internet. And if somebody repurposed that bot to buy and evaluate shopping experience of anything on the web, public and hidden, and not just cereal, right? Like, they didn't say go and, you know, buy something horrible. The bot could, like, out of its own volition, find its way to the hidden web and buy something horrible, like human organs. And Hi. Then... like, no one, the intention wasn't to even go to the hidden web. It was just to, like, buy and evaluate the shopping experience of anything.
I think, and that is the perfect point, because you're right. Say you could write a script to figure out the rarity of an item and only buy rare items, right? So, mm-hmm. like, you want to find the right. rarest item that you can afford. And legal items are probably pretty common, like, you know, like olive oil is everywhere. But, like, a fake Hungarian
really
passport.
Good olive oil.
Yeah, the really fancy, you know, Costco olive oil. No, like, I mean, if you had it buy, say you wanted to buy rare items, you know, mm-hmm. and, like, it ends up buying a rare item, which is a fake Hungarian passport, which is presumably not able to be purchased everywhere. Right. Like, then you get arrested because you bought a fake Hungarian passport from a site run by the Dutch police. Like, you know, like, are you to blame with that? Like, you're right. If you wouldn't tell it. But the thing is, it's like this opens up this realm of plausible deniability of, like, whether or not. Because, like the murdering scenario was, like, pretty extreme. But, like, if I reduce the hyperbole, you know, just a little bit, like, I could totally imagine a company putting the blame on a model like a neural network for, like, say, opening a valve at a chemical plant that ended up, you know, like, and it's like, hey guys, it's the neural net. Like, you know, like totally. We are very sorry that this neural net existed, but like, it really did save us a lot of money. You know, like you sort of like, it was really helpful to us, but like, we are sorry that it happened. But, you know, in fact, like, it's the neural net to blame, and we'll make sure to like, what? You know, like,
well, then I think you actually answered it, because it could be who benefits.
Oh, right.
Because in that scenario, the board of this chemical plant totally benefited because their stock prices went higher, even though like a bunch of people died. And this in the murdering scenario, like, clearly you benefited.
No, but it's true. That's a really great point.
And the shopping scenario, like, clearly the people who said go buy, you know, evaluate the shopping experience of anything on the web, they benefited. But it's now we have another problem, because they benefited, but they're like nice, boring people. They're not at all like.
No, I don't know. I think that's fine, because you could have like, if you like right now, if you received a fake Hungarian passport, like, would you actually have benefit? Like, are you using that? You know, like, what do you get?
I might find, knowing me, I might find some good use for it, but I don't want it, you know, right now. Like, I have no desire.
I mean, if you got like a crate of meth, like, you probably
that would be right horrible. Now. Yeah, that's true. So yeah, it's true.
Who benefits? That's a really interesting way to put it. And like, I don't know. I mean, this whole conversation is, you know. When people talk about, algorithmic responsibility and ethics in machine learning, like, these are the kind of things that are, you know, like, are going to be these big questions, like, ethically and legally going down the road. And this is why when people get into the field of machine learning and they're not technical people, right? They're like not the standard sort of like actually technical people implementing these algorithms. Mm-hmm. To me, this is just like, of course you want these other people in this conversation, because this conversation isn't even a technical conversation. Like, someone, like, we should all have, you know, someone technical in the room and yada, yada, yada. But like, like, AI is a general purpose technology, like roads or the combustion engine or planes, right? Like, it affects everything, which is why it's such a, you know, a big deal. But then everyone who talks about aircraft doesn't need to be a pilot, right? Like, you can have lawyers about aircraft that have never piloted a plane before, and like all that, and like people who are experts in the business of airlines but aren't pilots. Like, you don't always have to be a pilot to be part of this. And, you know, these are really, really complicated questions, and I feel like we've sort of dabbled on it, neither of us being a lawyer at all, but like, I, you know, this is going to be a case. There's totally going to be a case where some algorithm
that's something. Data science lawyers, dude, that'd be awesome. I don't know if I've ever heard of that,
the little data science lawyer, machine learning lawyer. Yeah, that's awesome. All right, that is the show for this week. If you liked what you heard, you can listen wherever you get your podcast. We will be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us at PartiallyD. You can follow me at Chris Albin. You can follow Vid at Vid_Spandana. Have a great week, all.
See ya.